Welcome, everybody, to Judging Nerd Culture. I'm Ollie.
And I'm Coop.
We're here to review everything that Cooper loves and hates.
Yeah. This is part two of our second Let Me Tell You About It collection, where Ollie told me about Mass Effect last week, and boy, we got into it. There's a lot of Mass Effect, you know? And listen, like, I'm sure any one of those games could be a three-hour episode on their own. This was a very broad overview.
Just a quick thing. Sorry it was so long. I didn't want to do a single game because I thought, I haven't played them in years, and I will not be able to do an entire recap of the plot in a serviceable manner, but I could do the overarching plot.
It's all good. We talked about all the important stuff, and also, you don't know how long it is. I haven't edited it yet. I could get it down to like a svelte 45 minutes if I just get really, really picky with stuff. That's not the point. Today, we are talking, I am going to be talking about The Binding of Isaac, which now goes by like The Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus. That's the most up-to-date sort of expand. Yeah, I know what it sounds like. Don't worry, we're gonna get way into it.
You don't know what it sounds like. It sounds like a really kinky pregnancy fetish.
There is, fortunately, and I think wisely, not really any sexual content in The Binding of Isaac, but it is rated M. So I'm gonna open right up front. If you are going to be like, and this has like a comedic tone, but if you cannot handle any, explicit or implied, like, violence towards children, that happens in this game. It's not, like, played for laughs. Like, there's a tragedy around the entire sort of story and just business of this game. But, still, like, your character is a little, probably 7 or 8 year old, and they undergo all kinds of frightening things. So if that is like a real deal breaker for you, and again, I promise, like, you know, I'm making it sound probably worse than it actually is, but I was like kind of kept away from the game for a while, just thinking like it was going to be some like real, you know, edgelord dead baby joke type bullshit. Not that I am opposed ever to dead baby jokes, but also it's just, you know.
Yeah. No, especially when you make the main character someone so young, it doesn't seem like the purpose would be explicitly like, let's make fun of little kids dying. Right. More like, let's make the world traumatic and horrifying because that's what it is to a child.
That is exactly it. You've given me a real good summary of what this fucking game's tone is without having ever played it before.
I've only ever seen you out over the corner of your shoulder, and I didn't even know what the graphics were happening.
No, it's pretty incomprehensible to just, like, if you just saw, like, apropos of nothing, just scenes from the middle of someone playing through it, it wouldn't really look like anything. The Binding of Isaac is a top-down, it plays a lot like old-school Zeldas, like, you know, A Link to the Past or whatever. You move in all of, you know, all of your directions. You have WASD controls. You can cry tears, which is your main projectile weapon, in the four cardinal directions. Yes. So you don't have mouse aim. You just shoot in the four directions, but you can still, like, the tears take on some of your momentum, so it's not quite so precise. Like, you can, there's a whole rhythm to it. Like getting good at the very basic controls is sort of the first of many, like, difficulty hurdles. Not that they're like bad controls, it's just unusual if you've played, like, you know, Gradius or whatever, you know, Space Invaders, and you expect it to go straight line every time. It's not quite like that. But yeah, you're a sad, crying baby. I say baby, you're like a kid, you know. Isaac, the character, can draw and read and stuff. But I suppose let's get into the plot. First and foremost, I know you have, like, no background on this. I mentioned The Binding of Isaac before, like, a few days ago, you thought I was talking about the guy from Golden Sun, which is probably going to be a game that I do want to Let Me Tell You About It at some point. Those are just, like, the longest, talkiest, fucking boringest turn-based RPGs of all time. And I really like them, but they're boring as shit, plot-wise. When you fire up The Binding of Isaac, there's a bit of an opening narration, and everything we get after that is, like, dubious as to how real it is. But, essentially, the opening narration, Isaac is a little boy who lives with his mom. Dad is not in the picture. It is there are very few hints as to what might have happened to Dad over the course of the game, but Mom essentially goes down a sort of a depressive streak and gets extremely into watching the, you know, shouting religious guys on the TV, and then eventually hears a voice from God that first says, you know, oh, your son is being tainted by demons. You've got to keep him away from all the evil influences. Locks him in his room, like, basically permanently. And then after that comes the sign, the second sign from God, or it's the third, I forget, the first two were some combination of, like, take away his toys, throw him in his room, and then the final one says, hey, listen, you know, I'm not sure if you're faithful enough, you got to sacrifice this kid. Which is, like, that's the original, the biblical Isaac. The guy ended up not going through with it, but, you know, well, I mean, like, not for the right reasons, you know.
Yeah, this has been a thing that has always nipped at my heel.
Let's do it. Delta Cryptid Bible review. Let's go.
A quick Bible review, jumping the gun. Mm-hmm. So, dude's supposed to kill his son, right? In the Bible. Then he's like, all right, I'm going to kill my son. Cool. God said so. And then he goes to stab him, and God stops him. He's like, ah, that was the test to make sure you do exactly what I say. And the way I read that as, I don't know, a teenager, in my mind was like, oh, he just stopped him from doing something bad. I thought the point was, don't do bad things the way I taught you to do them ahead of time. They'll just listen.
You really think so? I mean, I think that's one of the most commonly pointed at Bible stories, right? Like old school Bible stories that's like, hey, I don't know about this.
I don't know about this God guy, man.
Yeah, well, that's, we're getting to it. So, like, we don't typically bring in, like, outside of the media material, but the creator has gone on record. This is the same guy who made Super Meat Boy, if you're familiar at all with that.
The one that you play on the Flash?
Yes. The Flash game? And also, that was, like, there was a Flash version of this game as well, but, like, the actual versions you buy are, like, expanded and stuff. His name is Edmund McMillan, and if you've seen Indie Game the Movie, which I cannot recommend even remotely, it's so fucking boring. But if you've seen Indie Game the Movie, that's one of those guys. No disrespect to him, you know, it's just, like, God, I can't stand documentaries personally. In any case, we're not reviewing that. But I don't typically bring in the creator's words, but it's very obvious what this is the second you get into it, of, like, you know, a criticism of fundamentalist, like, specifically, like, very close, like, isolated Christian, you know, twisty, you know, along with, like, we can't decline an opportunity to get into the Delta Cryptid class corner, because there's a whole lot of, like, money-making revolving around the manipulation of religiously susceptible people. So Isaac's mom is, like, you know, a hyper-religious nut, and the story kicks off when she finally snaps and is like, okay, God said I gotta get rid of this kid, he's taken over by demons, you know, we gotta do it. So she grabs her kitchen knife, busts into his room. Isaac hears this happening, then finds a mysterious trap door under his rug that he didn't know was there before, and he opens it up and jumps into the basement. And that is the inciting incident. Everything that happens afterward is you playing the game. You run through first your basement, and then to the caves beneath your basement, and then into, like, more sinister underground constructed artifact zones, and then into the womb, and then beyond sometimes.
Cool.
It's, you know, like, the layers to which people are like, okay, till this point is the subject of a lot of debate.
It's real up until he finds the rug.
I think that's most people's take on it. There's some, like, you know,
he got murdered by his mom.
Oh, you know, either he got murdered or just what you're playing through is him. So there's another interpretation that some of the endings shed more light on. Nothing ever really spells it out, though. At least nothing that I've gotten to. I'll be honest with you. I've played this game for quite a while. I still haven't beaten any of the, like, super secret hidden bosses or, like, done any of it on hard mode. Like, there's a lot of game happening here. Like, a fuck ton. You get a lot for your money. I'm gonna lead with that right away, because it's gonna be hard to articulate exactly what it is after that. But anyway, so, you know, I'm on board so far. It sets the right tone, I think, because it's very clearly not just, hey, let's laugh at this child getting abused. It's like, oh, this child is getting very abused, and what you're seeing is from that, like, little kid imagination perspective. We've gotten into that on this show before.
But also, like, I think it's cool that he's, you know, the main character, and that implies that you're gonna murder a bunch of things with your tears, which is hilarious.
Right.
Because, like, I don't know, in a situation where it's a kid being abused, the power fantasy is the most important of the fantasies.
Yep.
To, like, put her back to a place where they can, I don't know, do something, succeed at something.
You keep on prophesying what I'm going to talk about. Oh. Because the power fantasy of in the gameplay, particularly, is, like, the whole reason this game works whatsoever.
So, gotcha.
Like,
you know, I'm just going to stop talking.
No. I appreciate you chiming in. It's like a teaching moment. You know, you're the fucking... the guy from Radiant who's like, but General, aren't we supposed to do this? And then I'm like, well, now.
I take moderate offense to
that. I didn't mean it like that, but, you know, like that's the function we're fulfilling. In any case. So, the whole deal, you start off, you're Isaac, or you're any number of other characters, but the very strong implication is that all of the characters you unlock are just Isaac wearing... like a different outfit and then pretending to be someone else. So, and they're all like biblical figures or some like demon weird names, like, you know, stuff from Christian mythos.
Do you get to be the hair guy?
Samson? Yes. Nice. We'll talk about Samson. I'll do it. I'm going to do a rapid fire fucking character thing once I get through this sort of, you know, just basic gameplay. But you start off in the basement. Each different biome, there are two floors. At the end of each floor, you fight a boss that opens up a trapdoor down into the next floor. It's all procedurally generated. So, like, your levels are just sort of randomly built out of different room templates, and when you play for a while, you start to, like, you pretty much have seen every different room before, once you're a certain number of hours in. Like you... And that part of that just growing familiarity is what makes you better at the game. Like, you do gradually increase your actual, like, character power as you play, but most of it is just your skill. Because when you die, it's game over, you're all the way back to the start.
One of those.
Yeah, it's one of those. Now, each run is, like, 40 minutes long. You know, it's not like, that's if it goes well. Maybe, like, an hour tops, and that people, the real pros in the audience are probably guffawing at me saying that. Like, they can probably do it lightning fast, but, you know. Like,
40 minutes, what a chump.
So, as you continue through the floors, you're finding pickups. There's some classic Zelda things. Red hearts refill your health. When you get hit, you can pick up some hearts. It heals you back up. Like a lot of this initially is Zelda references. You also have bombs that you can blow open rocks. Some rooms just have, like, here's treasure stacked behind the rocks or whatever. Bombs can also be used to fight. They do a lot of damage to enemies. They will hurt you as well. There are also secret rooms, which don't appear in any way on the map unless you pick up some special item that shows you where they are, but there are a few patterns. Like, if you're looking at your overall map and there are rooms in, like, a U shape, like there's an empty space between three or four rooms, even generally it's highly likely there's a secret room there. So once you see that pattern show up, you can blow open the wall, and typically there's some good stuff inside.
It seems like a lot of it's sort of like what's that called when you telegraph your abilities in each area? Like, seems like a lot of this is setting up, like, all of your verbs and making sure you can distinguish them between rooms.
Yeah, in the beginning, that's totally what it's about. Like, and you just start off with your general tier shooting. You hold down one of the arrow keys and you shoot tiers in that direction. It does alternate back and forth between which eye you shoot out of, which generally doesn't matter. They're going to hit the same things regardless, but, like, sometimes you'll get into a situation where a guy's, like, hiding behind a rock or something, and only one of your eyes' worth of tears is, like, getting past. But, you know, that's mostly just an aesthetic thing. Then one of your characters you unlock has an eye patch who just shoots tears out of the one eye at double the speed instead. And all of the enemies you're running into are other, you know, weird-looking baby-type things, like, but just creepy and deformed. Like, it's not like you're fighting rats in the basement. There are flies and spiders, and those are generally, like, spawned by other, you know, rotten or nest-bearing, like, it's a very cartoony style. It's very, like, you know, easy to look at and and see, just immediately tell what's happening, and generally you can immediately tell what something's going to do when you first look at it, but if it were any more detailed, it would be too horrifying for me to play, perhaps. You wanna... Yeah. And the enemies will ramp up in complexity and danger, of course, as you go further and further down. The big thing, the big, like, whole... what draws people in, myself included, is that each floor has an item room. The first floor is free. After that, you need keys, which you just find keys. Like, sometimes if you clear a room, they'll drop a key. Sometimes, you know, you've got to blow something up to get a key. Like, there's treasure chests occasionally that have keys. Some of them are locked and require a key. Yeah. The treasure room after the first floor always takes a key. There are also shops, which you have to open up with a key, and you find coins, and, like, the shopkeeper is always just a, like, a corpse sitting there. It's not like a rotting corpse. They're, like, just, you know, like, very non-detailed like you are, but just, like, a gray, lifeless entity. And you can totally just blow it up with a bomb if you want, and sometimes they drop coins, but, like, it doesn't mean you can then steal from the shop. Like, you're not really buying from anyone, which is part of where the imagination angle comes in. It's just like, oh, coins mean I buy stuff with them, right? But, so in any case, you're picking up items, and most of the time, an item is, like, just a passive thing you collect, it gives you some kind of benefit, and that's where all of your progression comes from. You don't, like, level up or anything, this is the equivalent of you leveling up. So, if you get something really strong in very early on, you generally, that's, like, a sign of good luck for the rest of your run. And every time you go in, everything's laid out differently, you're gonna get different items and stuff. In Isaac, it's just, like, it might happen. It might also happen that you just stay on the curve, or it might happen that you pick up the dunce cap, and then you're just fucked for the entire rest of the game. The dunce cap causes to shoot out diagonally from your head rather than straight forward, and because they alternate eyes, it will alternate, like, different diagonals, like northwest or northeast, for instance, and it makes it damn near impossible to actually do anything.
And you can't just get rid of it?
No, yeah, you can't drop anything. Once you grab something, like, that's a part of you now, which means there are some items that are, like, high risk, high reward, and when you run into it, you've got a way, like, okay, here's where my status is now, here's how it would change if I grab this thing. And part of the complicating factor of just being new to the game is you don't know what any of this stuff does. Like, there's no description. You pick it up, there's, like, a brief line of just, like, yeah, either a hint at what it does or just a joke about it, and you have to figure it out for yourself, which what that really means is you tab over to the wiki and then look up what it does if you have that kind of time. But, like, part of the mastery of the game is learning to recognize on sight what something does. Because, like, if you go into a shop and you have a limited amount of money and can only buy one thing, you're going to want to know what you're getting. And it's hard to just Google, okay, blue orb with a line coming out of it over here. Like just the image on the screen of the thing you're about to pick up is not always abundantly clear.
Reverse Google image search it, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, open up your screen grab and do that. Oh, man, I bet people have done that before. It's really not that big of a deal. Like, the whole, you know, dying is a whole big part of the game. But, yeah, that's, like, your power progression. So, for example, I once played through a run of the game. I had some of the items are activated items. You can only have one of those at a time because it fires when you hit the space bar. And so you can only hold on to one, because otherwise it would just be a goddamn mess whenever you hit the space bar. Like a cooldown that's like a number of rooms you have to clear before you can use it again. My favorite activated item of all time is the sprinkler, which you just put it down and it shoots your tears in, you know, a sprinkler pattern. But whatever other modifiers you have on your tears, it then gains also.
Nice.
So, like, you know, if you get built up real ridiculous, it's awesome. Or if you have tears that explode, it will fucking kill you. Like all kinds of layers of in this way is what is charming about it. But I got the sprinkler. I got an item called Continuum, which causes your tears to, if they fly off, if they would hit the wall, they instead wrap around. And then I had a thing which causes, whenever the tier hits something, lightning arcs off of it and hits other enemies around it. So I would just pop down the sprinkler, and then infinitely this just, like, huge lightning storm would incinerate. I'm sure I had other things as well, but, like, you know, just, like, boop, and then, like, the whole room would get mangled, and I would just basically have to sit there dodging guys until it was all over. Like, awesome. And that's like, the whole appeal. There are some items that are super great on their own. The one I anticipate being your favorite, if I telepathically project you into my position, is Mom's Knife, which replaces your tears with just a knife. And you hold it out in front of you. Like, if you tap in a direction, you'll point it that way. So you can do, like, melee stuff with it. But instead of shooting, you'll charge it up and then throw it in that direction, and it boomerangs back to you. Huh. So, like, it gives you a huge damage boost. Like, it's just ridiculous. If you get it early on, you can just chop up first floor bosses in, like, two hits. It's absurd.
Can you use that and the sprinkler?
Mom's Knife sprinkler, I've never done it before. It's probably amazing. You would just shoot knives in
every direction. Various
configurations. Yeah. One of the other things that's, like, subtle but makes a big difference, even in just the way that you feel, not necessarily in a gameplay way, when you have regular tiers, like Mom's Knife overrides your tiers, you know, various other things do it, but when you have regular tiers, every time your damage goes up, the tiers also get bigger. So if you're on a really good run and you have, like, a huge damage boost, you're just shooting massive fucking tiers, which sometimes can make it harder to, like, hit between obstacles and stuff, but in generally it's just so worth it. various things let you fly, which means you can just fly over rocks and stuff. If you try to shoot while you're flying over something, like, it'll just hit the obstacle that you're on top of. But if you get spectral tears, your tears become ghostly and they can go through things. So if there's a room with rocks, you can just go onto the rocks, have yourself protected by them, enemies can't run into you, they can't shoot at you, and then you can just fucking pop them off and have a boringly easy time with that. A fun easy time if you do a lot of damage, but a boring easy time if you do little damage and you're just like, I can't get hit, I'll kill them very slowly. Like, sometimes it can be a bummer, but...
So, it seems like this game's mostly about, at least in the gameplay itself, is about getting lucky and finding the right tools, mm-hmm. and then adding them as tags to your general verbs.
Yes, pretty much.
So, like, how much of the... is it an infinite variety? Can you just add together as many tags as possible? Or is there, like, a maximum number? Or, like, mm-hmm. is it possible that in a set area in the first chunk of the game you can find this or that or this, but you can never find this, this, and that?
You always have a limiting factor in that eventually you just run out of places where items can be. By the time you get to the various final bosses you might end up at, you know, there's a limited number of things you can pick up between then and now. There is a specific, like, some items are considered special items, and the game doesn't tell you this, but, like, Mom's Knife, for instance, is a special item, and that's just stuff that's so extremely powerful. Every time you pick one of those up, there is a chance that any other special item that gets rolled would get replaced with something else. So, like, in some ways, the real cream of the crop, top-tier stuff is limited. And, you know... Part of that's, like, kind of a bummer. I would love to stack all of those things together, but I see why, you know, in the broad scope. Like, you know, they don't want it to be too easy to just blow through. One of the biggest, like, most fun changes, once you get a certain ways into the game and you beat a difficult boss with a difficult, like, kind of a unlockable character, which I'll talk about eventually, but you beat the difficult boss with the difficult character, and Isaac, your starting character, who, once you've started playing for a while, you've probably totally ditched in the fucking garbage because everyone else has, like, fun gimmicks. But eventually you unlock Isaac's D6, which is an activated item. He always starts with it, and the D6 will re-roll all of the items in whatever room you're in. So at that point, that becomes, like, a much more purposeful, you know, risk management thing, because by the time you actually get there, you know what most of the items are, and you can be like, oh, fuck, soy milk, that's trash, and hit the button and re-roll it. I actually think soy milk is really good. Ali, obviously you don't know a damn thing about what I'm talking about.
No, I drank soy milk a few times.
Sure.
It's what taught me that I'm allergic to it.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so you wouldn't care for that. You might be allergic to soy milk in this game as well. I don't really care for it. Just the taste kind of puts me off. I've yet to have a good one, let's say that. But the item soy milk reduces your damage a fuck ton, but just increases your firing rate to the maximum. So once you pick it up, you have like a fucking machine gun, like a chain gun of tiny, tiny tiers. Generally, like if you pick it up with nothing else, you know, up until that point, your damage is about the same. But once you've picked up any like damage increases leading up to it, it becomes a net loss, just the way the formula works. That said, I always grab it because it's really funny looking. Like, and there are some things that can make it super amazing. Like, there are various items that give you like a percent chance for any tier to have a status effect. If cool. You're shooting 100,000 tiers, you're always going to hit with that. So that can be really handy. But, you know, a lot of people would see soy milk and then smash their D6 and re-roll it into hopefully something better. And that's where a whole lot of, like, strategy layers come in.
So how many uses does the D6 get, or is it infinite?
The D6 is a 6 charge, so you never run out, but you need to either finish 6 rooms before you can use it again. Which, like, if you use it at the beginning of a floor and then circle back around once you've cleared most of the floor, you might get another shot to, like, improve an item into something better. Or, occasionally, there are batteries that you can find. That's, like, the 4th pickup. Like hearts, bombs, keys, and batteries, and that will recharge your active item totally once you find it, which, like, playing as Isaac with the D6 makes batteries way more valuable. Like, most of the time when you find them, you just, like, haven't actually found an active item yet, so they're just kind of dead weight among the treasure. But, you know, a lot of it is according to chance. Like, in the beginning, I would say there is a lot of luck as you're, like, just getting acquainted with the basic skills of the game. By the time you get to the D6, there's a lot you've learned that you actually, like, the percentage of skill to luck in whether you're gonna win a run or not has overtaken it. There are a couple other things I wanna, like, talk about in the general flow, and then it's character time. But this never happens on the first floor, but after that, if you get through an entire floor without taking any damage to your red hearts, specifically red hearts, because there are other colors of hearts that will add on beyond your maximum health, and your maximum health is something you can improve, like various items will give you more heart containers, to use the Zelda term, but like blue hearts will just add on to the end, and that's just bonus HP. When you lose them, they're gone, but when you have them, they protect you. But if you get through a whole floor, which either means you played perfectly and never got hit, or you got some of those extra pickups, you will spawn a room where you can make a deal with the devil. And this is where a lot of the sort of skill plays out, because the deal with the devil will offer you items at the cost of heart containers. So you can spend your maximum health down, increasing your risk of dying, but that's where a lot of really powerful things come from. And generally, once you get good enough and learn the enemies and learn the bosses and stuff, and you can have a decent expectation you're not going to get hit, taking the deal with the devil becomes really valuable. Or if you say, fuck you, devil, and you don't want to spend your health for one reason or another, if you open up a deal with the devil and then refuse, next floor, if you qualify again, you might instead get the angel room, which just gives you items for free because you resisted the temptation. And the stuff in the angel room is bananas awesome, but, like, it takes a long while in the beginning of the game when you're less powerful to, like, get there, and specifically you have to, like, turn down major upgrades in order to have a chance to get major-er upgrades. I don't know how popular, like, the angel room is for people. And there are some characters, though, who are kind of built for the angel room because they can't get red hearts at all. They temporary hearts. That's, like, the super hard mode character I was telling you about before. Like, that guy can't pick up any actual red hearts that are, like, the kind you can heal much easier. It's just like, oh, if I got hit, that one's fucking gone now. In any case, so, like, it while doing the same sort of thing over and over, and also while you're doing this, like, you unlock items for doing damn near anything, like, kill this boss 5 times, you unlock this item, like, you know, reach this portion of the ending, you unlock this item, and every character has different items that they can unlock and stuff, so you're adding, most of the time, powerful things to your game that you have the chance to draw. Sometimes you unlock something that's a real piece of shit, and you're like, I'd rather not have this, but, like, that's part of the game, like, adjusting its difficulty to catch up to your skill is like, hey, we're just gonna make it harder now. You've proven that you can handle it, and I'm kind of into that. But anyway, yeah, that's like the real broad scope. It's hard to like get into the nitty-gritty about it without going through every item in the game, which we certainly don't have time for.
Definitely not. But you said you wanted to talk about some characters?
I certainly do. And so you got Isaac, vanilla-ass motherfucker. Once you get the D6, it becomes a very much more strategic sort of experience. Magdalene, whose whole deal is that she has just a bunch of starting health. She's like moves a little slower, but has way more HP, and starts with an item that will just heal her. Like, it's a 4-room charge, and it recovers some health. So she's like the tank class. The real way to go with her is just to spend her extra hearts on devil deals and get powered up and not be as tanky anymore, but just, like, that's more money for the devil.
Gotcha.
Then there is my boy Kane. He's the one with the eye patch. He just shoots tears out of one eye, which interacts with some items, like, weirdly. Like, there's some things that's like, oh, every other tier you shoot becomes extra powerful, but for Kane, they just are always extra powerful. That's, like... But there are some things that are like, hey, one of your eyes is replaced with this other thing, and then that just replaces his whole fucking tears and everything, because he's just got the one eye to work with. That's not his only gimmick. Kane has a, he's just extra fast and does a little extra damage. Like, in D&D, he would be the rogue. You can eventually, for him, unlock the ability to start with the paperclip with which he can pick locked chests. Not locked doors, but locked chests, which is, like, still really handy. Those tend to have a bunch of good stuff in them. You got Judas, who starts with one heart. Extremely fragile, but just does a fuck ton of damage. Like, that's the, oh, you're playing high octane Isaac now. And that's, like, a good character to play as to sort of train yourself to not get hit. And you're always gonna take a hit every once in a while, but, like, defense is a priority. And that's Judas's deal. He starts with the Book of Belial, which is a spacebar item that just boosts his power even more. So, like, for the boss fights, he's got an extra, like, go button. The Blue Baby, which is what the fans call him in the game, it's just ?, but that's, nobody's gonna say that with their voice. That's such a pain. Yeah. Blue Baby is the one I told you about who can only pick up non-standard hearts, and gets, like, a damage boost to halfway compensate for that, but not really. It's, like, it's a harder character to play than usual. But because he can never get extra hearts, various items will fire up when you're at low health, and he's always at low health because he has no health at all. So, that's kind of useful. There's secret advantages.
That's pretty neat.
There's Eve, whose whole deal is that when she is at just one heart, one red heart, she gets a big power boost. But she also has, like, a familiar that when you get hit, it spawns this dead bird that then flies around and attacks enemies. So you want to, like, heal yourself, go into a room, and then get hit, and then activate the power boost and the bird, and that's, like, your optimum power. Like, if you stay at low health, the bird will never come out. It just comes out one room at a time. It's fiddly. I'm not so good with Eve. Samson, who you mentioned earlier, the hair guy, has a much easier to work with deal where just every time he gets hit, his damage goes up. It lasts for the whole floor. Nice. It's handy. So with Samson, you want to, like, amass a whole lot of health that you can then recover so you can get hit a whole bunch the next floor and get your power boosted. Can't, like, get super ridiculous with it, but you can get pretty ridiculous with it. Lazarus is someone I've never tried who starts off just real weak, but then when you die, resurrects as, like, just a stronger, just all around, all bases, like, better stats character. But just starting off worse than usual seems to me like a real, like, bummer prospect. Because if I just die on the first floor, that's, like, a whole lot of his advantage that has been wasted. I don't know. There is... I might be missing some people. There is The Lost. If I'm skipping anyone, it's because they're not that interesting. The Lost has no health at all. If you take a hit, you die. Which, that is, like, a challenge character. It can fly, and it has the ghost tiers. So, like, in a lot of rooms, like I said before, you can just put rocks or over a pit or something and be generally safe from the enemies. But high risk, high reward. There is Azazel, who can also fly, and instead of shooting tears, he has, like, a charged-up laser beam that he shoots out of his mouth, and it's really short range. It's, like, a couple character lengths compared to, like, generally being able to shoot across a whole room. So you've got to get in risky, but being able to fly, like, you know, like we said, opens up all kinds of fucking advantages and stuff. And also, the beam shoots over rocks, so if there's enemies, like, I'm running at you from around this wall, you can just pop them a zillion times before... before that happens. There is The Forgotten, which is an extremely interesting, like, secret character, who is a melee guy. He's a skeleton, and he has a bone, and you just tap the bone. You can hold down to charge up and then throw it, and it comes back to you, but it's basically like starting with Mom's Knife, except weaker, at the start, at least. When you get damage ups, it gets really, really strong. You still can shoot tears as The Forgotten, because when you press Control, your ghost pops out, and it is just like a flying ghost that can shoot regular ass tears. It's tied to your skeleton body, but while you're not in the skeleton, it doesn't take any damage. You just, as the ghost, can get hit. So that lets you, like, short range fly, because you are, like, pinned to the skeleton body, so, like, it makes dodging a real pain in the ass, but in some, like, you can just, again, hop out of the skeleton, fly over a pit. It's complicated. It's real complicated to play as that character with all those gimmicks, and then when I go back to just, like, yeah, let's play one as Isaac. It's just, like, walk around, shoot tears. The come down from that level of, like, of mystery is a whole thing.
I got a question.
Please.
With the skeleton, man. When you deactivate your ghost, does the body come to you, or do you come to the body?
No, you just pop back to where the skeleton was. Okay. So, like, if there's a door or something that is inaccessible or whatever, which doesn't generally happen, but, like, you can just fly through it, and it will take the skeleton with you. But other than that, it's just, like, within the room, you have just your short sort of chain. Yeah.
So, another question. These characters, to switch back and forth between them... like, that's just per game? You can't do it on the fly?
Yeah, it's only when you go in for the run. Which, again, the longest you're going to be stuck with someone is, like, a 40-minute sit-down or something like that. That's if everything goes really well. But, yeah, nothing on the fly. It's just, like, you set your starting conditions. And it really does, like, have a big effect on play. But sometimes when you get just a bunch of, like, big badass items or moderate items that form a particularly good combination, like, towards the end of the game, your character's specific nature is a lot less of a big deal than it was at the beginning.
Gotcha.
So, with the exception, probably, of The Forgotten, the skeleton, who's, like, got so many fucking gimmicks, it's hard to pin down. And even, like, The Lost and Azazel, who, like, have flying and other, like, weird extra powers. Like, you can get flying as other characters, and you can even, as the skeleton, be able to fly, which basically eliminates the need for the ghost. But, like...
You can shoot, though.
Yeah, you can still shoot. It's complicated.
So there's no, like, doubling up? You can't have fly naturally on your character and then double up fly and get better fly?
Double fly doesn't really do anything. Most of the time, items that let you fly also give you a speed boost, and the speed boost is always nice, but, you know, there are some things that just, like, I don't need this. Like, if you already can fly and then see something in the devil that would let you fly, you can say, fuck it, and then take off.
Cool.
You know, but that's, like, you might not know what it is, because you're just looking at, like, oh, that's an upside-down cross. Why would that let me fly? Okay, it turns me into a demon with wings, whatever. Like, you know, these are just things you learn through osmosis. I imagine anyone who doesn't know Pokemon being, like, talked to about Pokemon would just be like, how the fuck do you remember all this stuff? It's just, like, a real muscle memory type of a thing that you accumulate.
All right, well, just one more question, then.
Please.
Do you want to go into the self-promotion corner?
I would quite love to. Yeah, we need as many coins as we can possibly pick up. There's a thing in Isaac called greed mode that I won't even have time to talk about probably, which is fine. But we're in greed mode, baby. We need what we can get. Why don't you tell them about the lovely patreon.com/deltacryptidproductions?
Indeed. So I want to make a correction to, I believe, something was said in the last video, in the last podcast. Our tiers currently will be altered slightly. Our $1 tier will no longer be existing since it's lacking in pod. Instead, the $3 tier will be given the additional PDF of Terra Magia. Oh,
yeah, I did say that wrong.
Yeah, it was not a big deal. But yeah, for just $3, you get a wild amount of stuff. And wild meaning a moderate amount of really good things.
Oh, absolutely. So in The Binding of Isaac, the maximum number of coins you can pick up is 99. So if you even give us $3, that gives us a lot with which we can modify our tiers. But but you get the tiers, actually.
Yep. For $3, you can have the core rules for Terra Magia in PDF, which will be posted soon. You can get the access to the backlog and future episodes of the Delta Cryptid Remix, which is just us lamenting over the things we've reviewed and wishing they were better.
Oh, yeah. Or struggling to improve things that are already really great.
Yes. Some of the real good ones we just had to go ahead and say, you know what would be great if this was another one? And beyond that, you can get incredibly cheap advertising through us. Maybe a message to a loved one, whatever is really up your alley. Whatever you want us to say, as long as it's not obscene or racist.
Right.
You can you can demand an episode, because it's an episode, and you can be on an episode with us.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of that sounds like something that might pique your interest, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Delta Cryptid Productions.
Hell yeah. That's if you can part with some money. We totally understand if you can't. And if you can't, there's another excellent way to help us for absolutely free. If you fire up iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, it'll do wonders for us getting seen, for us reaching other people. Maybe they have some money. Maybe they'll just give us some reviews. You see how this works, right? So for like just a minute or two, if you can fire that up. And also, we want to hear from you. We'd be excited to know what you think. That would be a splendid help. You can review us on any other podcast app, too, if you're not an Apple user. Neither of us are, like, we understand, but iTunes is, like, the big money one. If you have a friend with an iPhone and they want you to, like, take a picture of them at some point, take their phone and then take the picture and then also sneak over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review from them and then download a few episodes of our podcast onto their iPhone and maybe they'll listen.
Yeah, be a good friend, grift your friends, take their photos. Have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
Last message is that we are continually expanding and adding new things. If you check out our YouTube channel, there's Let's Plays and manga reviews up currently, and we're going to be adding more weekly.
Hell yeah.
All right, that's everything, right?
Yeah, yeah, groovy.
Let's get the hell out of here. Let's get back to the game.
Let's get back into it. So, endings are a thing in this game. They don't generally convey a whole lot, but go through like the sort of progression. As far as boss fights go, there's a ton that I like, won't be able to get into nearly all of them. What I think my favorite one, just style wise, is probably the Haunt, which is a big ass ghost, and it's a kind of a pain to fight. It starts off just invisible and ethereal and bounces around the room like a screensaver wise, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it summons like little ghosts that chase you. Once you kill all of them, the Haunt peels back its ghost face skin. That's some next level undead shit. Like, I'm super into that. And then it flies up to the top wall of the room and does kind of a side-to-side, kind of a Space Invaders thing. Like, it becomes a top-down when you're fighting the Haunt. You're just sort of worried about horizontal distance, and shoots things at you, spits spiders at you, like, all kinds of good stuff. If you hate spiders, this might be a tough game. They're not realistically rendered or anything. They're just a little red dot with some legs. But if that's enough to set you off, like,
go look at that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's tough, right? That's, you know, we sympathize. So, like, but there's a zillion billion bosses. The ones you're always gonna fight as you go through is once you get down to, like, sort of the three quarters mark, you fight Mom, who's not your entire Mom, but just, like, in the room that you're in, parts of Mom, like her eye or her hand, will shove through the doors and try to get you, and occasionally you'll see a big shadow growing over you, and that means her foot is about to come stomping down, and you just need to shoot the parts of her that expose themselves. Obviously, none of this is real. Isaac's not really crying tears that are so violent they kill his mom in real life. Like, this is definitely the metaphor zone.
Unless he has his mom's knife.
Unless he has his mom's knife, in which case he cuts them. Yes, yes, yes. We entered the metaphor zone long, long ago, but just to make it official. I forgot we had that as a sort of a segment. In any case, when you kill Mom, just the boss Mom, an opening, which is not rendered detailed in any way, but the trap door, let's say, to the womb opens up, which can be the final area. Once you play more, you unlock further and further final areas, but once you get through there, you fight through some bio-looking-ass rooms and, like, fight weird eyeballs and tentacle monsters. It's bloody and creepy. And then you eventually get through to Mom's heart, which is just a big ol' heart in the center of the screen. It shoots waves of bullets at you. It's like a bullet hell kind of a boss, compared to others that are more in your face. And once you kill Mom's heart, it then becomes replaced with It Lives, which is just Mom's heart, but, like, baby-shaped. Like, it looks like a being now, and it gets a power increase. I have no idea what this is really supposed to represent. Like, you know, she's twisting, her heart has taken the shape of her sad son, or some bullshit. I don't know.
There's probably she's having another child and has abandoned you.
Or, but it's her heart that's the child? Weird. I don't know.
Or she has love for this thing, but not you.
Yeah, could be. That's entirely within the, when you kill It Lives, there's a trapdoor that then leans down to Sheol, which is, I think, just another word for hell, but it's not like fire and brimstone hell. It's like dark, cavey, sort of skulls everywhere hell. Like, more doom than lava Satan, you know? Or into the cathedral. If you go through Sheol, you fight Satan, which is cool. It's just like, it looks like the Satan that the Sabrina reboot got sued over. Like Baphomet, that particular demon design, the hoofed, horned guy. Not the handsome Lucifer of the TV show Lucifer. That's the distinction. And Satan is one of the, for most intents and purposes, final bosses. Or, if you go up into the cathedral, you fight Isaac, who is surreal, but it's always Isaac, regardless of which other character you're being. Except this one, he starts just, like, crying on the ground, and he's you. He's the same size as you. And then when you shoot him, it wakes him up, and he starts shooting. Like, this is a super bullet hell blast. Like, compared to Satan, who has a bunch of different forms, just kind of cycles through other boss archetypes, this one is totally just a shooby boss, who eventually grows, like, angel wings, and then when you kill him, he ascends into heaven. Eventually, after, like, successive more game wins, past Satan is the void, in which you fight the Lamb, but, like, the, you know, the capital L Lamb, like the serious, you know, Jesus Lamb. I barely know what it does. And after Isaac, you then fight Blue Baby, which again is three question marks, but, like, for all intents and purposes, it's just a blue baby with X's for eyes. And this is, like, the most kind of lore hinting that goes on, which is that, like, you know, at the beginning of the game, it says he finds the trapdoor, he goes into the basement. What a lot of people think is instead that to hide from his mom, he throws all of his toys out of his toy chest and then climbs into the chest and closes it and then suffocates. And that is where the blue baby comes from. It's him, you know, with no air, etc. But nothing is definitive. Like, you know, if you play the game, you could potentially work some of this out for yourself. But ultimately, like, that's not really what you're there for. It's just interesting layers of mystery, and sometimes you pick up an item and you're like, you know, that could actually be something in this meta story. But other than that, you know, that's, like, it's just intriguing. Like, they didn't have to go as far as they did, but they did, and it makes it, like, it does add, as far as I'm concerned.
I think they needed to. This is that's great. That's the best part of this game so far.
Compared to you're a spaceship, you find upgrades. You know, that's just a whole lot of nothing that most video games are. But this is like, you know, it nothing is like this.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, the tags that you can put on your verbs to make cool, fun mixtures is really cool, and I'm not sure how many other things have done it. I'm sure a few things have.
Oh, yeah.
But it's still novel enough to me that I find it to be an incredible mechanic that I am almost interested to try, but I don't think I ever will.
Oh, that, you know, that, again, totally fine. Like, it is a gross game. You know, there's, like, weird mutant babies and shit and blood everywhere. It's not
that
ideal,
doesn't bother me any. Mm-hmm. I just don't like the typical Gabantana gameplay.
Sure. Yeah, there's a number of things. It's just, we inadvertently, of course, dove down the trapdoor into the final summations floor at some point. But, you know, that's pretty much what we're talking about. But, like, the theming and even just, like, compared to, like, you got the red gun, it's like, you pick up the wooden spoon, which increases your speed, and then Isaac gets a bunch of welts because he got beat by the spoon and then now moves fast. Like, not all of it is that upsetting. Some stuff is just like, you know, hey, you pick up a knife, now you've got the knife. It's upsetting in the way that it's upsetting when a kid has a knife. There's a famous Vine about that. But, you know the one, listeners. You know, it's just totally non-standard in a world full of this type of game has swords and shields, and this type of game has assault rifles and grenades. This one, it's tears. And, like, you pick up the sad onion and it makes you cry more tears. Like, that is just a weird theming thing that does, make it go a lot farther than it would otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I was mentioning, I've never been a big fan of this genre of game, this like the bullet hell style game. We've played a few for the show, and we have a few more coming up in the future, I'm sure. And I obviously give them a try because I'm not I'm not gonna say that they're bad because I don't like the type, the genre.
Right.
Like, I understand that there's quality in them.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's just never been my style. But this game adds a number of things that just by you mentioning them genuinely intrigues me. The tagging to your verbs and the fun morose aesthetic, the dark humor style aesthetic is fun, but then also the long-winded and uncertain narrative I think is the best part.
I want to emphasize, it's extremely short-winded. Like, us talking about it on this episode is probably longer than the combined entirety of, like, cutscenes, so to speak, that exist in the video game. Like it takes place over a long time, you getting the bits and pieces. That's probably what you meant, right?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's not long-winded just for the listener's appreciation.
Yeah, all I meant by long-winded was that in the long run, like, you're going to have to put together a narrative that's longer than the game
you just played. Right.
You're going to be the one who actually writes what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You have a bunch of metaphors and a bunch of things that could mean anything, and probably does to one of the creators somewhere, but it could mean whatever you want it to be, and that's real interesting. I think that's a really good way to go about, especially for a game like this, where it's not clearly established, like, this goes here, this happens here, you know, this kid, Isaac, is the one doing all these things, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A narrative that's focused on just metaphors and leading you to, so this could have meant this and this could have meant that, means that everyone who's played has the potential to make their own, like, canonical narrative that is fitting to the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And I want to compare something like this, which I think, like, this type of narrative could really only be in a video game, you know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't read an Isaac comic book. It would, like, the fact that you're playing something in between getting these little tidbits is the only way it becomes a work of media of any kind. Like, compared to a lot of the anime and comics we've talked about on this show, where the characters explain what's happening for a long time and it still doesn't make any fucking sense, you know? Something like this, where you're meant to meet it halfway or three quarters of the way, but that's, like, obviously the intention, rather than, you know, this is trying to make sense and it's not, which you end up with so often. Like, it is refreshing. I'm glad that's, you know, that's the bit you've latched onto. Obviously, it's harder for you to latch onto the gameplay stuff because you've not played it, which is part of the curse of the let me tell you about it. Not really a curse, but
honestly, I think I like it more having not played it.
Oh, sure.
Because, again, that's just me. Mm-hmm. But no, this is interesting, and I compare it in my mind to Princess Remedy because it's the most recent style of this, or the most recent game with this type of gameplay,
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, you have the cardinal directions, you shoot with whatever.
Yeah.
And just based on what you've mentioned so far, I feel like I'd be far more interested in Binding of Isaac than The Princess Remedy, which wasn't bad.
Oh, it's Isaac, way more fleshed out. I mean, it's a full premium time. Like, you Princess Remedy, you pay $3, and you get a fun thing for $3. But Isaac's like a game, yeah.
Yeah, it's
no offense, Princess Remedy. I love you.
You're a game too, Princess. Mm-hmm. You're just, you know, $3.
Sometimes things are short and less complicated, you know? That's just the way it is.
But no, this game seems, I don't know, more elaborated upon and more extensive than Princess Remedy, and more nuanced with its physical gameplay, that I would be probably more into it than Princess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's just...
Oh, yeah.
That's my frame of reference, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
And I will put this out there, just as a sort of a... As we continue the show, as a discussion I'm having with you and with the listeners, The Binding of Isaac cannot really be considered indie at this point by any stretch of the imagination. Like, this guy's a bajillionaire, you know. They're continuing to update it. Like, they're very successful. But it was once indie, and a lot of the stuff that we are going to play as we continue to try to throw bones to indies that we want to sort of elevate, as is one of our favorite things to do on the show, a lot of them are going to be either top-down bullet hells or, text adventure / you know, dating sim / you know, narrative games, because those are the two types of games that it's just preposterously easy to make really quickly. Like, you can throw together a prototype of such a thing super fast and know if it works, and that's like, I can imagine The Binding of Isaac being built with, like, okay, I've made this character, he kind of moves the way I want him to, he shoots the way I want him to, that's step one, done. And then I'm gonna make one item at a time, put it in the game, see if it works, move on to the next thing, compared to, like, if you're making a fighting game or something and everything needs to be immaculately balanced with every other thing, you know, or like a racing game has a whole lot of momentum and physics that are just not necessarily the case. Even, like, platformers, you know, like Mario, the gravity and momentum of his movements are super complicated to actually program, which is why a lot of indie stuff is going to be bullet hells and dating sim text adventure things, which we don't have to exclusively cover those things, but just, like, they're gonna come up from time to time. I've never really felt super inclined to make one or the other. Anyway, I don't know, that's just, like, # gamer trivia for our audience, but I tell you, that one was long-winded. Ollie, help me figure out what we learned from all this.
What did we learn about all this? We learned, don't trust religion.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, the listeners can take or leave that at their leisure. You know, we just judge a nerd culture.
So sorry. Don't trust TV religion.
Very good. Absolutely perfect. Yeah. I was going to go with similar... Oh, okay, here's one. What we've learned is be extremely careful with explosives. That's basically... That's a major lesson of Isaac.
Makes sense to me.
Hell yeah. All right. Peace.
Adios.